And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Y'all, I'm talking about covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here, Alabama. I mean, y'all, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. Hey, by the way, you hear the ads playing during the break? That's an important thing. Right Side Radio is a standalone business, for those who don't know. I mean, you're hearing us on different radio stations around the northern half of the state, but we're not owned by those stations. We own the content, and we send them our show. But, you know, like any other business, you got to have your revenue streams to make sure you can maintain operations, and one of the ways that we do that is, of course, by selling ads. So if you're listening to this show and you're thinking, man, those guys got it going on. I mean, they say the things that I think, they speak the way that I speak, and we got a ton of ruffians out there listening to this show that would love to buy goods and services from other ruffians. So if you're listening to the show and thinking you'd like to be advertising on it, we'd love to help you. The way you do that is go to our website, rightsideradio.org, rightsideradio.org, click on the advertising and contact tab, and just send us a message, and we will get back to you right away. So yeah, rightsideradio.org, click on Listen Live, and on the advertising and contact, and send us a message. We'll get right back to you. And by the way, I get almost chastised for forgetting to tell people.
Yes, I know exactly what you're saying.
Huh? What?
Are you going to talk about the store because
yes.
of the t-shirts, the yes. socks, the everything, and get yourself a Yeti?
Yes.
I mean, come on. I was just thinking about the Yeti. I need to get me a Right Side
you
Yeti.
You do.
I do.
You absolutely do. Since you don't drink coffee, we got to get
don't
you.
Don't drink coffee.
You got to get you something to drink out of. But yeah, on the website, we got the Right Side store. You can buy Right Side coffee mugs, Right Side t-shirts, Right Side water bottles, and Yetis and tumblers. And oh, by the way, Right Side socks, which I just find to be fascinatingly cool. So yeah, check it out. We'd love for you to wear some of our merch. And if you do something like that, stocking stuffers, great idea. If you do something like that and you're out and about wearing a Right Side t-shirt, send us a picture of yourself where you're at, like on vacation or wherever else, wearing a Right Side t-shirt. Would appreciate that greatly. All right, I'm in number two of the Triple Dipper. I'm calling it Head on a Swivel. Y'all, there's things happening in this big old world that we got to keep an eye out, but it's not all, by the way, happening in other places. For instance, story here on the Daily Wire. That was very lackluster. Let me try that again. That was like, does this feel tired? What just happened? How about this? Story here for the Daily Wire. All right. House Intel Committee Chairman says terrorist threat to the U.S. is the highest it's been in over a decade. I'm calling this segment Keep Your Head on a Swivel. And I say that because if you, and most of y'all know the phrase. If you don't know the phrase, all it means is be aware of your surroundings. Keep an eye out. Watch things that are going on and don't be caught off guard. So House Intelligence Committee Chairman Mike Turner, Republican from Ohio, said over the weekend, this story came out, by the way, yesterday, said over the weekend the terrorist threat to the U.S. is the highest that it's been in over a decade following Hamas's attack on Israel last month. Turner made those remarks during a Sunday CBS News interview with Margaret Brennan on Face the Nation while discussing FBI Director Christopher Wray's recent testimony to Congress. The testimony, by the way, centered around like groups like Al-Qaeda calling for terrorist attacks against the U.S. He said, "This is very, very unusual for the FBI director to so publicly make these statements." In other words, read between the lines, y'all. The FBI director to get out there and in front and say this means he's very concerned about it. He says certainly in his conversations with the intel community, they've been on an unclassified basis, so we have the ability to talk about it. It shows the extent to which these threats are troubling the director. He's indicated the increase in terrorist threats to the U.S. inside the United States, is at its highest ever. And he cites the chaotic withdrawal of Afghanistan and the loss of our intel gathering there. He cites the southern border and individuals who are allied with the international terrorist organizations that have crossed the border. I hope, by the way, you just noticed there was two things that happened there. One is we were just told by the House Intel Committee Chairman that in even unclassified briefings with the FBI director, that the FBI director is gravely concerned and estimates that we are at a higher risk of terrorist threat inside the United States than perhaps we've ever been. But then he did something else. He basically attributed it to things that the Biden administration, his boss, the Biden administration has been trying to say weren't that big a deal. He pointed out the chaotic withdrawal of Afghanistan and the fact that we now don't have any human intelligence gathering going on there. He pointed out the southern border and the fact that there are individuals who have crossed it who are allied with international terrorist organizations. So, y'all, the FBI director, I got issues with Christopher Wray. I have issues on a regular basis with the way he runs that shop and the things that he presides over and the fact that I believe that American civil liberties are being trampled on and that he's just a little lackey a lot of times for the Biden administration's efforts. But he's still the FBI director. He still is, and he's still privy to things. He's still knowledgeable. He's still in a position of authority. And he's saying that his own boss's actions, Afghanistan, the southern border, have created a higher risk than perhaps we've seen in maybe our lifetimes. Let that sink in. Now, when I look at this and I think, okay, keep your head on a swivel, let's take a look abroad and then we'll come back to domestic again, all right? Take a look abroad. So this story broke. This is also Daily Wire. It just happened to be. Story broke yesterday. Iranian-backed Houthi terrorists seize a cargo ship in the Red Sea. Let me just step back and remind you guys that about a month before he left office, Donald Trump declared the Houthis, which is an Iran proxy group out of Yemen. They're radicals, they're violent, they're extremists, they're terrorists. And so the Trump administration declared them to be a terrorist organization. Biden took office a month later and decided at that time, with no time under his belt, decided to we're going to take them off the terror list. Really? And the whole world began to wonder, why did you do that? Well, that meant that they weren't going to be facing sanctions. That meant that they weren't going to be facing as much scrutiny. That meant that intelligence gathering assets might be diverted because they were no longer considered to be worthy of specific, intel. Okay, wow. So the group he took off the terror watch list just shot down one of our multi-million dollar Reaper drones, last week? And now, this week, they seized a cargo ship in the Red Sea. Iranian-backed Houthi terrorists from Yemen, the group that's not a terrorist group, by the way. Iranian-backed Houthi terrorists that are not really terrorists, because Biden said so, from Yemen reportedly seized a cargo ship in the Red Sea on Sunday, this past Sunday, which comes after the terrorist group had recently threatened to target Israeli-flagged vessels in the area. So yeah, they've issued threats against any Israeli-flagged vessel. This particular Bahamas-flagged cargo ship was actually leased to another company that is owned by an Israeli businessman, and somehow it's believed that they knew about that and they seized that ship intentionally. Israel reached a statement on it, stating that this is piracy, terrorism. The statement that they released said there's 25 crew members on the ship from all over the world, but none were from Israel. It's a 620-foot ship that had left a port in Turkey, was headed to India, seized by terrorists. The statement says, "This is another act of Iranian terrorism. It constitutes a leap forward in Iran's aggression against the citizens of the free world." It also goes on to remind us that, the Houthis, they are constantly a source of trouble. And they are constantly calling for death to Jews and death to Israel. And they are, for reasons we cannot fathom, not on the terror watch list because a month into office, Biden decided that just really wasn't necessary. I mean, we don't need that. Why would we need that? We're going to take them off of there. We got to start trying to build our relationship with Iran. No, you really don't. Iran could care less. Iran sees that as weakness. And yet, keep your head on a swivel, folks, because right now, the Houthis that are not really terrorists, because Biden said so, are seizing ships in the Red Sea and shooting down U.S. drones. By the way, they also, fired launched a number of drones towards U.S. naval vessels that were all shot down, but they were shot down in self-defense as our active systems had to come online to take out these drones. So they're downing our Reaper drones. They're launching drones at our naval ships in the Red Sea, and they're seizing cargo vessels. But they're not a terror group. They're just, you know, I don't know, what is it? Hey, Joe, are they just misunderstood? Are they just, do they have a hard childhood? Is that what's happening here? It's a mess, y'all. Keep your head on a swivel, because right now, Joe Biden's still in charge. Let's take a break right now. We'll take the break. We'll come right back. And yeah, I just, wow. We got more on this. Like, military.com suggesting that we need to strike a delicate balance in responding to the attacks on our U.S. forces. Forget that. Proportionate response. That's for losers. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like making common sense like a superpower. Hey, listen, I got to tell you else who's got some superpower common sense, and that's our friends over there at the Elm Foundation. So the Elm Foundation, if you're not familiar, ELM, Elm Foundation, they're based out of Huntsville, but they are like so epic good at what they do. And what they do is really just help people get back into life. I mean, we're talking about getting them off the streets and getting them back into a level of productivity that perhaps some of them hadn't seen in years. And they don't do it like, you know, like a government program where they throw money at it, hope it works. No, it's all privately funded. It's all, by the way, done with what I would call conservative principles, like the idea of hard work and the idea of dignity through hard work and self-worth being something that you can work towards and getting people into a place of productivity. And also, by the way, providing them with accountability, like milestones, like plans they have to meet. It's very cool. The stories they told when they were here in our studio one day not long ago just basically were just amazing to hear. So good to know programs like theirs are out there. So listen, this is a year-end. Some of y'all are considering your year-end giving right now. And if you're looking for a charitable organization, they are indeed a 501c3. I wish you would check them out. Their website is ElmHSV, because they're in Huntsville. It's ELMHSV.org. That's the Elm Foundation at ElmHSV.org. Check them out. I think you will be impressed. I know we were. All right. Hey, listen. Oh, by the way, when you do that, tell them you heard it on Right Side Radio. I would appreciate that too. So I'm in this section I call Head on a Swivel. And I made a comment right before the break about proportional response is for losers. I've said that before and I still mean it. It's proportionate response. Anyway, this story I've got right here came from military.com. And military.com, it came out 2 days ago over the weekend. This is the most apologetic, minimizing article I think I've ever read. It's as if injuries suffered by military personnel in attacks for which we're not properly responding, since there weren't many of them, it's not bad. That's what this article reads like. The headline says, how the U.S. strikes a delicate balance in responding to attacks on its forces by Iran-backed militias. No. Let's make sure we're clear. A delicate balance is not what I would call military terminology. You don't strike a delicate balance in military terminology. You don't win wars with a delicate balance. That's what ballerinas use, is a delicate balance, all right? That's what losers used. Story here, Iranian-backed militants in Iraq and Syria have long battled with U.S. and coalition forces launching sporadic attacks against bases in the region where troops are deployed. Starts off by saying, well, it's been happening for a while. It's nothing new. Okay. But since October 17th, as civilian deaths in Israel's war against Hamas began to skyrocket, there's been a dramatic spike in attacks by Iran's proxies operating under the umbrella name of ISIS in Iraq. While most of the more than five dozen attacks, let that sink in, five dozen attacks, that's over 60 attacks. Am I right in saying, what's my math? 12 times six? Yeah, 12 times five? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Had to gut check myself. Of the more than five dozen attacks, which have been largely ineffective, oh, because that matters, at least 60 U.S. personnel have reported minor injuries. That's all it says. 60, minor. Most of those have been traumatic brain injuries from the explosions. Y'all, TBI is reflected on military personnel records as something that gives you long-term potential implications. But it's not been TBI. It's been traumatic brain injuries from the explosions. You understand? And all the troops have returned to duty. Well, okay. I guess it's not that bad then. In response to the attacks, the U.S. has walked a delicate line. The U.S. military has struck back just three times. At least they said just. Just three times as the Biden administration balances efforts to deter the militants without triggering a broader Middle Eastern conflict. It's not like you have to launch the 82nd Airborne to jump in, but you can do a little more than what they've been doing. So here's the deal, in more numbers-based terminology. According to the Pentagon, Iranian-backed militants have launched 61 attacks on bases and facilities housing U.S. personnel in Iraq and Syria just since October 17th. So where are we right now? That's exactly a month and 3 days. Of those, 29 have been in Iraq, 32 in Syria. The U.S. has about 2,000 U.S. forces in Iraq, about another 900 in Syria, mainly to counter ISIS. But they also use what's known as the Al-Tanf garrison, which is further south, keeps tabs on Iranian proxies moving weapons across the border. Okay. So we got 2,900, almost 3,000 troops over there. That's not a small force. That's a sizable force. And they've suffered 61 separate attacks as of this story 2 days ago, just in the last month. But they've only had minor injuries, only traumatic brain injuries. I mean, it's not like it's a big deal. Okay. But then he goes on to say this. But the U.S. military response to the attacks on its forces has been minimal. At least it says it that way. On October 27th, U.S. fighter jets struck two weapons and ammunition storage sites in eastern Syria that were used by Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. On November 8th, fighter jets dropped bombs on an IRGC weapon storage facility. On November 12th, U.S. airstrikes targeted a training facility and a safe house. U.S. officials says the Iranian-related personnel were there and likely struck, but provided no details. Then it says, brace yourselves, there are concerns within the administration that a more substantial retaliation could escalate the violence and trigger more attacks. But critics argue the U.S. response pales in comparison. So, yeah, this kind of weakness being projected puts our troops at more risk of additional attacks. Well, you know what? We've lashed out at them 61 times. We've injured 60 of their personnel. What'd they do? Well, they took out a couple of empty facilities, one of whom they say people were in, but they don't have details. Okay. Walking that fine line, that delicate balance. Look, y'all, keep your head on a swivel. We'll come back and finish this one up. But listen, Taiwan is saying there's more of a threat from China right now. And the last piece I've got, here, I'll read you the title. America is a heartbeat away from a war it could lose. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here, live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, covering down on all of the issues. And yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number three as we move through dipper number two, which I'm calling Keep Your Head on a Swivel. There's stuff happening in the world. Let me take a few text messages, then I'll jump right into what may be one of the most... I don't want to call it stressful, but, you know, anyway, alarming articles that I've read. It's an opinion piece, but it's based upon sound policy experience. So I'll tell you about that in a minute. Real quick, Mike from Athens, if I get my mouse to work, Mike from Athens just said, America's already in a war with Ukraine. It can't win. Well, we're not designed to be the one who win it. You know, and I think that I don't mind us assisting Ukraine in its fight against Russia. I think we almost have to, because keep in mind, if Russia had been able to march in with the 3 to 5 day timeline that it said it would have to take Ukraine, then I guarantee you their eyes would have been next on the Baltic states. The Baltic states would have been actual NATO allies. We would have been drawn in by Article 5 of the NATO Convention. And so we have to stop them cold at Ukraine. Have to. But right now, what you have is a feckless Biden administration that has no clue what it means to fight a war, to lead anything. And so their idea is, because they're Democrats, because they're liberal Democrats, their idea is always throw money at it. Quick, throw some money at it. Just throw some more money at it. What are you going to do? I don't know. Throw some more money at it. That's what they're doing. There is no plan. I do not mind if we were going to, you know, provide clear and convincing milestones that we have to meet. But right now, we're not doing that. Brian from Huntsville just says, send me, 59-year-old former tanker with no tank, but I guarantee I can do more positive in Gaza than Biden has done. Ooh, there you go. Brian from Huntsville. Been a little salty today. Yeah. Glenn from Bluntsville says, military job, break stuff and kill bad guys. Indeed, sir. You are right. Heads up, by the way, to all of you driving in the northern part of our listening area. One of our listeners, Brandon from Athens, says there's a wreck on the Decatur Bridge. So if you're heading from Huntsville back into Decatur, crossing over, there's a wreck. There's only one lane in both directions. So that's not good. Thanks for the heads up, Brandon. Anita from South Huntsville says, get Bucky's to advertise Right Side Radio. Well, they should after my monologue today.
Yeah, we got to send it to them. Maybe they'll advertise or maybe send us some beaver nuggets.
By golly. Anyway, all right, let me jump. Oh, I you know what? I missed some down here. Allie from Athens says, now that the DOD appears to be wanting to deal with a debacle of separating team members and others from the military, is there any room for the DOD to be sued for the debacle that took the lives of the 13 when Afghanistan was being abandoned? You know, likely not at the current state, unless you can find that there was a clear and unequivocal denial of intelligence that they should have acted upon, you know, arbitrary and capricious type behavior. But right now, it was military members in what was still considered to be a hot zone, and so I doubt it. Where are we right now? Brian from Decatur sent me something I got to look at. Thank you for that. Joe from Birmingham says, hindsight is 50-50. It's Coach Dye. Yes, it is, and he was right. All right, let's wrap this up here. Very sobering article. It's a multi-part article. I'm going to spend a few minutes on it. The headline, it came from foreignpolicy.com. You hear it sounds a little thick. Came out about 4 days ago. The headline of it is, America is a heartbeat away from a war it could lose. Now, I'm a pragmatist, but I'm also an optimist, if that makes sense. I'm a pragmatic optimist. I'm the guy that usually sees the glass being half full, but I also recognize it's only half full. All right, so I'll just tell you, I'm always looking for the high side of things. This article is not a lot of that. But I can't argue away the things he's saying. So the guy who wrote it is a guy named Wes Mitchell. And I had to look him up to make sure that he had some bona fides that I agreed with. But Wes Mitchell was the Assistant Secretary of State for European and Eurasian Affairs under the Trump administration. He's got a long history of working in foreign policy and in positions of recognizing, you know, how certain things affect other things on the international stage. He's got his master's from Georgetown, and he's got a PhD from the University of Berlin. So he says, the United States is a heartbeat away from a world war that it could lose. There are serious conflicts requiring U.S. attention in two of the three of the world's three most strategically important regions, and should China decide to launch an attack on Taiwan, that situation could quickly escalate to a global war on three fronts that directly or indirectly involve the United States. He's not wrong. We're already actively engaged in the Ukrainian effort against Russia in Europe. We are already actively engaged in upping our military presence and trying to stem the tide of terrorism with Hamas and Israel, both of which are flashpoints, both of which could escalate and easily draw things in. We are a NATO ally. If a NATO nation is attacked, we're supposed to help respond. If Israel winds up getting in trouble, they are a true long-term ally. We're supposed to be there. Describing the United States predicaments, it says in this article, in such stark terms, may strike many readers as alarmist. But he said it's becoming less and less viable by the day. As Russia mobilizes for a long war in Ukraine and a new front opens up in the Levant, that's Israel, the temptation will grow for a rapidly arming China to make a move on Taiwan. Phil talking here, keep an eye on China-Taiwan. I say that because they recognize the weakness of the Biden administration. They recognize that we are also stretched very thin right now, that recruiting and manpower and readiness is down. And they recognize that should a Trump administration, or for that matter, any other administration, take office, that they will likely not be given as much free rein. The time to do what they would want to do is going to be when we are most distracted and when we are at our weakest point, and they feel like we could not possibly sustain a three-front effort. That's me talking, but I think this article is going to go that way. It said, one of the factors we have to consider is geography. Today's U.S. military is not designed to fight wars against two major rivals simultaneously. In the event of a Chinese attack on Taiwan, the U.S. would be hard-pressed to rebuff that attack while keeping up the flow of support to Ukraine and Israel. In other words, we may have to choose. It's because unlike the United States, which needs to be strong in all three places, each of our adversaries, China, Russia, and Iran, they only have to be strong on their home region. It's true. We would be expeditionary, which is always harder. An expeditionary force requires a great deal of logistical effort. An expeditionary force requires time. It says the worst-case scenario, then, is an escalating war in at least three far-flung theaters fought by a thinly stressed U.S. military alongside ill-equipped allies. All right, then he gets into other things. It's also something to consider that while we have fought and won multi-front wars in the past, World War II being one, that we were always doing so at a time when we could outproduce our opponents. No longer the case, he says. China's navy is already bigger than the United States in terms of its sheer number of ships, and it's growing by the equivalent of about 130 vessels every 4 years. By comparison, the U.S. Navy plans to expand by 75 ships in the next 10 years. Another related disadvantage is money, it says. In past conflicts, Washington could easily outspend our adversaries. During World War II, the U.S. national debt-to-GDP ratio doubled from 61% of GDP to 113%. By contrast, it says, the United States would enter any conflict today with a debt that is already there in excess of 100% of GDP. Assuming a rate of expansion similar to that of World War II, it's not unreasonable to expect that our debt could swell to 200% of GDP or higher. Then he says the next thing is oil. Two of our U.S. rivals, Russia and Iran, are major oil producers. One recent report found that a prolonged closure of the Hormuz Strait amid a broader Middle Eastern conflict could push oil prices beyond $100 a barrel. By the way, are we energy independent right now? No, we're not. We rely upon oil from others, and much of it does come through the Hormuz Strait. China is also a major holder of U.S. debt, and a sustained sell-off by Beijing could drive up yields in U.S. bonds and place further strains on the economy. While he says, and by the way, this is a long article. I'm not going to go through all of it. He says here, if all of this sounds dreadful, well, that's the point. As the biblical proverb says, fear is the beginning of wisdom. Global war is no longer a theoretical contingency debated by policy wonks, nor is it a fever dream of supposed hawks or militarists. It is a real and foreseeable, if not imminent, possibility. I got to say, too, some of this would have been, and it already was, out there to consider as a contingency and something that had on the shelf, you know, operational draw write-ups ready to go. Because it wasn't like we didn't know. It wasn't like Hamas just became a thing when Biden took office. It wasn't like China wanted Taiwan after Biden took office. These were all there. But they were kept in check by a much different version of foreign policy than what we see now. What we see now is appeasement and delicate balances for proportionate response. And throwing money at one and then realizing, oh no, we got to do others. At the same time, you crush your own military readiness and you reduce your energy independence, and you leave yourself open and vulnerable then to what could happen. I'm just telling you, folks, keep your head on a swivel. This is actually the time, in my opinion, for us to really tighten down and make sure that we got everything in order as a nation, as a culture, as a people. Because what we're looking at right now is a very dangerous world. A very dangerous world. Keep your head on a swivel. We still got a year of Biden left to go. Oh, that was almost depressing. Let's move to a break right now, and I'll gather myself. We're going to switch gears. We're going to come back here in just a moment, and we're going to talk about fighting words. That First Amendment, that little pesky First Amendment, that little thing that gets in the way of liberals every single day. Wow. Well, I'll tell you what. We're fighting over those words. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.